T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
The entire conversation he had, his resting face was a slight smile. I think he's making this effort to change the way he interacts. But as I listen to the words, I think he said some things that really kind of belie his intention, his stated intention, to think about the ramifications of what he's saying before he says the words.
Middays on the Score.
That's Steve Greenberg of the Chicago Sun-Times on the Score with Mully and Haw a little bit earlier today. And what we're talking about are some quotes that raised some eyebrows here. And when asked directly about the reception he got from fans, lukewarm would be one description. Mixed would be another.
I think that's a little favorable. It seemed pretty negative to me in 3 of his at-bats.
And when asked directly about it, he says, "I'm a baseball player for the Chicago Cubs. I'm one of the dudes in this clubhouse. I'm one of the guys who goes out there and puts his ass on the line. We do it because we love it. We want to win. We want to bring another championship to Chicago. And if hometown fans want to boo someone that's trying to help bring the team a World Series again, then that's on them."
Yeah, those are the comments as relayed from by Steve Greenberg in the Sun-Times. It's a complicated situation, and I think that that's probably best remembered in reading or listening to Addison Russell talk to. I don't know that it's all that smart to judge the guy based on comments he makes, especially to an assembled group of reporters. Some judgment, sure. Some inquisition, sure. Some questions, absolutely. But in a guy, and maybe I'm wrong here, Dan, you tell me, but with a guy whose actions are clearly trying to be remade so wholesale, a guy that has trouble expressing himself vocally to begin with, whether it's to reporters, other people, teammates, or whatever, I find it difficult to parse through each and every word of his trying to relate whatever his situation is through the media like this.
No, we just also know that his self-awareness, his understanding of everything is part of what is being assessed on a day-to-day basis.
That's true.
And the Cubs have told us they care about these things. They care about this.
Specify these things for me here, at least just in this case, because his public-facing comments.
That's part of it.
Okay.
That's part of it. And it is part of a job. The Cubs have invested in this. Now they're taking on a real big responsibility in tendering him, in continuing to own this and commit to helping him and trying to be on the right side of it.
They absolutely are.
I don't need to go back through everything that Theo has said about it, but that sounded a little defiant to me and a little bit unaware of why he's being booed. It has nothing to do with him, some lack of understanding of him being on the Cubs or a lack of understanding of him trying to win a World Series. That's and to ignore that, to openly show that you don't want to understand that, has to at least concern the people who are watching him way more closely than we are and care about it way more than we do.
No doubt about it. I struggle making that last connection that you did, that these words mean he doesn't want to understand it. I don't know that that's true. I don't think the guy's all that eloquent. I don't think the guy has a huge vocabulary, and that's not his fault. That's not a thing he needs to be judged on. I think his actions do need to be judged, and the Cubs are obviously keeping close watch on that.
Let's talk to a Chicago Cub while we can. I don't think we've had a chance to speak to Kyle Ryan before, but he is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. What's happening, man? How are you?
Not too bad. How are y'all?
Wonderful. Kyle, great to talk with you. Find your story of arriving to the Chicago Cubs and their efforts with you to kind of remake and realign the delivery all these last like 6-8 months or so. Really fascinating. Can you kind of whiteboard how the conversations about what needed to change and how to make you into the 11.5 strikeout per nine guy that you are right now kind of started?
Oh, we don't look at that strikeout rate, by the way.
We don't look
no,
at that.
No. We want ground balls.
It's nearly 12.
No, we want ground balls. We get ground balls, we're winning. It's a very weird weird situation. After the 2017 season, I really I didn't see myself playing too much longer. It was just a rough season in the minor leagues. I spent a month in the majors with the Tigers and didn't do very well. I had a hard time hitting the broadside of a barn, so I was a little frustrated. I ended up going to the minors and trying to throw really hard and do everything I could to throw a strike, and it just didn't work out. After that season was over, I got designated, and there wasn't very much communication between myself and any other teams. So the Cubs reached out to me, and Kyle Evans reached out to me, and the first thing he said was, "We know how to fix you. Let's sit down and talk." So we sat down and talked, and he put a computer in front of my face and said, "This is what's wrong, and this is how we're going to fix you." And I said, "Okay, let's go. Let's do it." And showed up to spring training, and we worked things out. I spent all last year, all 2018 season in AAA, and I think we found what got me back to the 2016 self, which is where I was my best, and I think it might be a little bit better than where I was in 2016. So obviously it's all for the good. I'm back to where we want to be.
So what was on that computer, and what is it like to have somebody able to put a screen in front of you that gives you the key to unlocking something like that?
Well, it's incredible. Growing up in the organization that I grew up in, it was a very old school organization, and I didn't believe in video. Like I was that guy that went out and threw to batters in order to get themselves out. Like I knew I wasn't going to get many strikeouts. I had to throw and force them to get themselves out. So I didn't look at video a whole bunch. I knew what I needed to do: throw down and away, up and in, change speed, change on levels. And so I didn't look at video. And the fact that a video is what changed me. Like Kyle Evans showed me that my arm slot was up 4.5 or 5 inches, and for him to show me that, and me, one, to believe it, and then to believe in myself to be able to fix it, it was pretty significant.
Was it? When he called and said, "We know how to fix you," what was your first reaction to it? Like, "Oh, that's nonsense." Were you skeptical of it at all? And how did that change once you did see the video of yourself?
The fact that Kyle was the first team to have contacted us, I was not skeptical at all. I mean, I was all for it. The fact that a team called me and wanted me, that. And the fact that my agent didn't reach out to the Cubs, it was vice versa. So it was pretty awesome. I mean, it's nice to feel wanted, you know.
What a cool story that is! And then to get in and actually do the work. How did you then dive into the process and use video to continue to see yourself evolve into the quote unquote fixed version?
I mean, That's kind of who I am. If somebody comes to me and gives me advice, I'm going to take it. It's no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, I'm going to take that advice, and if I run with it, I run with it. If I don't, I don't. But I'm always going to take somebody's advice, and it's going to sit with me for a little while. And like I said, if it works for me, then it works, and I roll with it. And this is one of those things that it definitely worked for me. And I'm going to roll with it as long as I can.
Talk with Cubs left-hander Kyle Ryan here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We're live at Gallagher Way. Kyle's been a big part of a reshaped and very effective Cubs bullpen. But I'm looking at your baseball reference page, 27 years old, 28 in September. Kyle, were you close to hanging him up?
Uh, Yeah. Yeah, I was pretty close. Like I said, after that 2017 season, I had a hard time hitting that broadside of that barn, and walks started growing, and strikeouts were very few and far from in between, and I just not very confident. I was struggling, and it was not fun. And baseball became a job. And now that I can throw strikes, It's a lot more fun.
We've been talking also about a pitcher on the south side named Lucas Giolito, who at 6'5" realized that his height was making it difficult for him to do things repeatably, and he tried to shorten up his arm swing a little bit and change his delivery to get something that would be easier to slot and repeat. Have you ever had issues at 6'5"? Have you ever had a coach say that, you know, sometimes guys who are have the long levers have a difficult time staying consistent with their movement?
I've never had a coach tell me that. In my opinion, the taller I can get, the better. So if I could get some stilts, that would be awesome.
Is that for generating the downward angles just for velocity itself? There are differing schools of thought on that, if it's a hindrance or a help.
I was going to say, for me, it's definitely not velocity. It would just be closer to the batter so they get a shorter time to see the ball.
When you arrived in the Cubs bullpen, there were some issues. There were a lot of walks, and you guys have definitely righted the ship. How would you describe the attitude of relievers right now, knowing that the first 10 days of the season were rough and were kind of like a gut check for a lot of guys?
I didn't get to be there for that, and I wish I would have said that I watched it more. I mean, It's tough to watch baseball like that, but you know, I mean, obviously you're in an organization that people talk, and obviously the games are on everywhere and in the clubhouses that you go to, so you know how they're doing, and you know how who's doing good and who's not, and so the attitudes in the clubhouse, but the fact that we could come up and help out. And I really don't think the attitude in the bullpen has changed too much since from when we got here. I mean, it's a pretty good attitude down there, no matter what. I mean, there's a great group of guys down there, old and young, so it's fun.
Kyle, before we let you go, how has your experience watching yourself on video affected the way you scout opposing hitters on video? Is there a larger understanding of just in general what's going on because you're better at watching some of this stuff?
I wouldn't really say that I'm better at watching this stuff. Like I said, I was not a very big video guy. And so I really had people that were good at watching video, and it's almost their job to watch video. They watch video for us. And so, I mean, I would like to say that I'm better at watching video, but I'm really not. I rely on others, and I go off of what I have in the past, and then I used others and their abilities to help me as well.
Kyle, appreciate you hopping on. Great talk with you. Best luck the rest of the way.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
That is Kyle Ryan of the Chicago Cubs. It's a hell of a story.
It really is.
It's a hell of a story that somebody, I'd love to know, you know, he named who, the person who called him.
Yeah.
But I wonder how that decision gets made in pro personnel where someone's like, you know what? I think there's something here with this guy. And then they go to Theo and Jed, like, yeah, you know what? Call him and let's see what we can do. You know, there's no risk. Let's put in a little bit of time there. Let's assign somebody to him. I mean, I love stories like that.
Kyle Ryan's 5 2/3 innings with the Tigers in 17, that year that was so, granted, small sample size, but a 2.84 whip, 14 hits per nine. It was just, he had the strikeout weight that he has now, except it was a walk rate in 2017, almost 11 per nine.
We've got the Midday Midway coming up next. I have a cautionary tale about the use of the public scooters that Chicago is bringing in. There's something going on in another city that I think you should probably know about.
Cross that off the list then.
No, go ahead. I've got others.
All right.
Go ahead. If you want to do that story, you absolutely can. I've got the mystery of the black ooze in New York. No one knows exactly what's going on, and I think we've got evidence of the existence of a dragon.
We're going to talk about parrot brains and Albert Pujols. Two different stories, though. The Midday Midway's on the way. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Baseball is start to the show, and for good reason here at Gallagher Way, as the Bernstein and McKnight Show is broadcasting from Wrigley Field. We're here because of Xfinity, the exclusive internet provider of the Chicago Cubs. We talked to Cubs pitcher Kyle Ryan, heard his unlikely story about how he got back to the major leagues after nearly hanging up the spikes. We also discussed the performance of Yu Darvish and what to do about that. Some comments that were made by Addison Russell that I am now told I have been in contact with a Cubs source who says the Cubs are aware and are displeased.
Displeased
was the word that was used. I don't know exactly what the upshot of that is going to be. Maybe nothing.
Maybe nothing.
Maybe something. Maybe I won't even hear, but they are certainly aware and not particularly happy upon hearing that. And what else did we discuss?
More baseball. And Rocky III. We talked about Rocky III.
Talked about
that. Last 25 minutes of Rocky III is the fighting between him and Clubber Lang.
Yeah,
it's bad. It's just bad.
That's one thing that the Creed and Creed II, that those movies got so much better, was the actual boxing.
Are you aware of the elite company Albert Pujols joined this week?
I think I am, but it's a statistic that we know doesn't mean what we used to think it means.
No, but it is impressive. He joined the 2000 RBI club. He, Hank Aaron, and Alex Rodriguez are the only three members of the 2000 RBI club. If you do the unofficial records, because Elias has kind of split things, we didn't keep track of RBI for the entirety of baseball. So Babe Ruth and Cap Anson would both be on that list if you wanted to include some unofficial stats. However, the fan that caught the home run that moved Pujols into the 2000 RBI club is completely uninterested in wanting to sell the baseball or give the baseball back. He's a Tiger fan. He arrived at the ballpark, or at his seats, I should say, moments before the home run got hit. He tells the story about how a fan, a different fan, not one of the guys he was with, was walking in front of him to get to his seats and had a baseball glove. And he goes, "Oh, cool, baseball glove, way to go. I don't think we're going to get one up here, though." Seconds later, crack of the bat, homer lands, pops up off a seat, because, you know, it's Tiger Stadium and empty, and it goes right into his hands. And apparently what happened, reading in the Detroit Free Press, is that Tigers, you know, the officials, the bartering process started, and they went right away with the hard sell on this guy. It's memorabilia and stuff, and how about a signed bat, and wouldn't you want this? He's like, no, I'm not interested in any of it. I don't want any of it. Maybe cash, money I'd be interested in. Kind of like flippantly, the guy's a lawyer, apparently, and not interested. He's like a work-for-free lawyer. Pictures of him make it look like he practices law in Yosemite or something like that.
Okay.
It's not the clean-cut, suit-wearing lawyer figure that
He represents the giant underground volcano?
That's what he represents. That or the Lorax or something like that.
Lorax is a team of lawyers now.
Just a team. That's what you need.
Filing all sorts of nuisance lawsuits.
Speak for the trees. For the trees have no tongues. And here are my lawyers, actually, who speak for me. But no, the guy's not interested at all.
The trees have no tongues, but Feldman over here does.
He's talking, and you better get to him. So I'm just wondering if this is, you know, he says, it's an heirloom now. He's going to give it to a kid or whatever. So Pujols was approached with his comments about wanting cash for it. You know, he's kind of being flippant, like, I'm not interested. And Pujols says, no, I don't want the baseball. It could not be more meaningless to me. I did not play this game to give fans money. So we've got, I don't know, it's just kind of an interesting back and forth.
Good for everybody then.
Yeah, I think everybody's on the right side of this. It's really quite, maybe except for the members of the Detroit Tigers and those who kind of started the hard sell on this. I think it's Brandon Hyde, the lawyer who caught the baseball. Good on you.
We have a blob problem in New York, and it's a little scary.
Same.
This is from The Gothamist. The Gothamist reports several months ago, we reported on a mysterious blob protruding from a vent off the 23rd Street CE train stop. And we asked the MTA what the goopy substance was, and they never got back to us. So we're still wondering, is this a totally non-concerning and ordinary secretion jutting out of the wall, or is it an impending warning from the Earth, a subtle message before hell swallows our city whole? Either way, the peculiar blob has been spreading its tentacles throughout the subway system.
What?
Just today, the same vigilant tipster who told us about the previous blob sent photos of another one, this time spurting from the southbound platform of the Canal Street 1 train stop. So this is the reporter for The Gothamist. Here's the other one. That's a different one there.
Oh, that's so gross.
It says, when I went down there to investigate, I found no less than 3 blobs bleeding ominously onto the downtown bound platform.
Oh, that is so gross.
Every single one of the leaking horrors protruded from the wall, 2 of them in particular. There's no way to put it delicately, but it looks like the wall is taking a dump on the platform.
Yep, that's what it looks like.
You may or may not choose to see this as a metaphor depending on your recent commutes, but MTA employees at the station say they didn't know what the blobs were or what caused them, and the MTA's press office has yet to get back to us. But this is the Gothamist says, we're trying to understand what these things are and if their takeover is imminent. So if you see blobs on the subway, snap a photo. This is really bizarre.
I, for one, salute our new blob overlord. Yes,
and everyone's making the Ghostbusters references, too, because if you figure with the slime is under the building, sure. Found out about Vigo, the master of evil.
Put it in a toaster. This is pretty cool. It's from The Post. When wildlife rangers discovered a strange lump on a wild-hatched parrot's skull, they took action and got it the best medical attention New Zealand could provide. Now the Massey University medical team behind the resulting operation is declaring it the first of its kind for avian medicine. There was a 56-day-old cockapoo chick born with a life-threatening skull deformity. It was airlifted from the zoo to the Wildlife and Wild Base Hospital, and there they performed the world's first parrot brain surgery.
Whoa.
A parrot brain, because brain surgery, you know, the regular kind with large human-sized brain, that's not difficult enough.
It is not an ex-parrot.
No, it's still alive. Once one of New Zealand's most common birds, today there's only 144 of these rare parrots, so that's why they decided to try and save this one. It was saved, very risky, a lot of complications, including permanent brain damage, a whole leak of spinal fluid, and the whole thing. That's for the bird, not the surgeons. They've rescued the bird, it's doing well, and back home, it appears to be a success. We're doing parrot brain surgery now.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Fossil discovery alert. We always keep you up to date on these. It was unearthed in northeastern China and has been revealed this week to be one of the earliest examples of flying dinosaurs. And you say, well, okay, big deal. Why is this different? Well, there is a difference, and it is important. The dinosaur is named Ambopteryx longobrachium. It lived 163 million years ago during the Jurassic era, and it had bat-like wings made of skin, supported by a long pointed wrist bone reminiscent of a pterodactyl, or, and you'll have to explain this to me if you're a Daenerys Targaryen devotee, the fearsome Drogon.
Oh, yeah, that's one of her 3 dragons.
Okay.
Yeah.
The fossil was found by a farmer in Liaoning province, with well preserved, with delicate details of soft tissue, such as the wing membranes, bristly body feathers, and even the contents of the small dinosaur's last meal still in its stomach. And it's only the second dinosaur with membranous wings to have been discovered. Now, they knew that dinosaurs that eventually evolved into birds had feathered wings.
Sure.
But what they're learning now is of this other stage in the Jurassic era where they are more dragon-like rather than bat-like, and they actually had wings made of skin rather than feathers.
What's the name of this thing again? The Ambiopteryx?
Ambopteryx.
Ambopteryx. Is that also time-traveling Terry's first pet?
He's got one on his shoulder.
That's what he's like, Edwin Encarnacion. He's running around the bases in prehistoric times with that thing as a pet. This from the Indy Star. I know you read it. Thanks for giving it to me. I love this story so much. So much. We told you a little while ago about the new venture that's coming to Chicago, this idea of rideshare electric scooters, this app that you use to log into these scooters, drive them around to places, drop them off at charging spots, or take them and commandeer them or whatever. They're in a number of cities. I first saw them in Phoenix, Scottsdale, Tempe, that whole area. But they're in a bunch of places, including Indianapolis. Here's where the Indy Star picks up the story. Electric scooters are all over Indianapolis. They're in places you would expect, like Mass Avenue, and places you wouldn't, like the downtown canal. In all, the city has plucked 37 scooters from the canal since its cleaning in late November. Chief Communications Officer for the City Department of
Metropolitan. Pat McAfee down in there as well, where they dredged it out.
The canal was drained in November, and trucks equipped with snowplow-like scrapers drove in to remove the muck from the bottom. About 20 of the 37 scooters in the canal were found during this process, and about a third of the canal is part of the park, while the rest is managed by the city, so they're finding them in all different places. Two companies have been operating scooters in Indianapolis since last summer. Two more companies have been approved to join the fray on the streets, and very soon, scooters are not allowed on the canal walkway, despite the fact that they found 37 of these things in the canal itself. I am telling you, people are going to use these things and just whip them wherever the hell they feel like it, as opposed to dropping them off in the right places.
My question is, though, did they get into the canal by accident, or is somebody literally just saying, I'm done here, and throwing it in the canal? Or is it a situation, we've seen it before, and anybody who has partied in downtown Indianapolis knows that that canal area is near some of the nightlife, and it might be complete accident that somebody just ends up zooming one into there.
The likelihood is all three. The likelihood is some people whip them in there probably for fun while they're leaving whatever the steakhouse is, St. Elmo, something like that. You could buy that. You know the shrimp cocktail there is really, you know, that's the thing. You can buy that in places.
The spicy horseradish sauce?
They bottle that and ship it around. There's some at my grocery store.
Seriously?
Yeah. You want me to bring you some?
No.
Apparently it's really good.
It is good.
I've never had it.
I'm not going to make a home shrimp cocktail. That seems weird.
That's not a thing for you?
No, just
get your martini glass out, set the shrimp down there across the edge.
No, that would just seem kind of weird.
It's about as bad idea as ride-sharing scooters here in Chicago. You're probably right. That's the Midday Midway?
It is. That is the Midday Midway.
I took a story from you. I apologize. I'm just so married to the scooter thing. It's just going to be bad. There's no way that ends up well.
It'll be fine.
They're going to have to replace all of those scooters.
How fast are they?
They get up there. It's probably about... it's about as fast as you could probably pedal a bike. A civilian, not like a Lance Armstrong on steroids kind of thing. Not that fast, but it probably gets up to 20 something.
That's pretty fast, actually.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like it is, but 20 on a sidewalk is fast and dangerous.
It felt like maybe I'm a little over. It felt like I was moving at a dead sprint. Like, really, like as hard as I could run, that's probably about as fast as one of those scooters could go.
You should come join us at Gallagher Way, because this is the place to be, starting to warm up slowly but surely with the sun out and warming up the bevy of impossibly adorable toddlers who've shown up today. Is it Cole Hamels bobblehead day?
Yeah,
is that what it is?
Day.
Yeah, I didn't know. Do toddlers love Cole Hamels? I mean, everybody loves Cole Hamels.
How could you not? I think his bobbleheads are chiseled from granite, much like his chin.
Are they?
It's the same thing.
Yep. The baseball player who looks most like a baseball player.
Central casting.
I believe he was nominated for that. But so that could be why many kids are here today. I don't know. But toddlers aren't aware of bobbleheads. Older kids are aware of bobbleheads. Or maybe parents bring the toddlers to get an extra bobblehead.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
And then they sell it on eBay.
Seekers.
Is that what they are?
That's what it is. Les is here with a bunch of toddlers.
Trying to grab all. He's got one of those stringers. I saw one yesterday on Lincoln Avenue. I saw one of these perch stringers filled with toddlers, and they were also all wearing neon yellow vests as if they
like
were
work vests?
Like construction workers. Right? It was just so cute.
Well, we got to get to the site, guys. All right, grab onto the leash.
Right,
everybody walk over.
They put on their vest, and they got like Velcro wrist tabs, and they look like somebody is culling their limit of perch. Like if they get a slightly larger toddler, they take the smallest one and they throw it back.
Sorry, this guy's got to go.
Yep, this one's going to go back in. Sorry, you're not part of the slot limit.
Still lots to do today. Sam Fold coming up in just a little bit. Jonah Carey at 11. We'll have Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic stopping by. He wrote a real interesting story about Chris Bryant and his use of a brand new bat. Plus, I, later on in the show, depending on where Sahadev sits down, I have, you know, you had a fun list yesterday of guys who had reached 100 career homers.
Which apparently got to up to the press box at Wrigley.
That
it got, for third hand, somebody listening was sharing it with reporters and broadcasters who were getting ready for the Cubs game yesterday.
I have another list for you. I don't know that this one will make the Cubs press box, but this is a list of home run robberies.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a good list.
Excellent. A heist, as you would have. And next up, Sam Fold, the former Cub, is part of a movie that's premiering in Chicagoland. He's going to tell us all about it next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Would you like something to read?
Do you have anything light?
Oh, how about this leaflet, Famous Jewish Sports Legends?
Yes, thank you.
Former Cub Sam Fold is now the Phillies' Major League Player Information Coordinator. He's on Twitter at SamFold5, and he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. How's it going, Sam? How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm headed to a Reading Phillies game right now. So if I cut out, it's because I'm in the middle of Pennsylvania, so I apologize in advance.
Well, why would the Major League Player Information Coordinator be going to a Reading Phillies game?
That's a great question. I do spend probably about 95% of my time with the Major League team, but on occasion I like to go check out the affiliates. So, not with the club, obviously, in Kansas City right now, but back home in Philly.
And you're a big part of this movie that is premiering now. It's going to be shown at in Highland Park. Good place for it. And the movie is Heading Home, The Tale of Team Israel, the documentary about the Israeli national baseball team that competed in 2017. And we talked about it a lot. There was the whole the bench on the bench thing that was going on, and it was a fun little story. But it turns out for you and others, it was more than just a fun little story. It had more meaning than that.
Absolutely. It had meaning in a lot of ways. It was really cool. Experience. It was amazing how we kind of gelled as a group. It was a group of guys that virtually didn't know each other at all. Outside of a couple teammates, former teammates of mine, I didn't know anybody on the team, but we got together and kind of had that immediate bond. We shared something pretty significant in common. And I think the reason, part of it helps explain why we played so well. I really believe that. We had great chemistry from the get, and kind of played with a sort of underdog label attached to us, which it doesn't matter what the competition is. I think that makes things a little more enjoyable when you do succeed, and it's a little bit easier to play that way. So it was outstanding, and for me, it ended up being the last time I ever put the cleats on, which makes it even more meaningful to me, obviously.
Did you know that was going to be the case going in?
I didn't, so I was still trying to recover from a pretty major shoulder surgery. And if you watch any of the games, you'll see like what kind of I was shot putting balls back from center field. So you would see that like I was in no real position to play, you know, affiliated baseball for 140 games. I was sort of able to hide my rag arm for a few games, but I ultimately. I spent a few months after the tournament trying to rehab and get my arm strength and range of motion back, and just unfortunately wasn't able to. So I had a feeling that that might be the last game that I ever played, but you know, I was out there in center field in the Tokyo Dome during our last game, and sort of like it all, you know, hit me, and I almost had tears coming down my cheek knowing that it might be, but I certainly didn't know at the time.
The movie's called Heading Home, The Tale of Team Israel. It's been playing at film festivals, and now it's being released in theaters. It'll be at Landmark's Renaissance Place Cinema in Highland Park starting today. And there are Chicago connections here. Former White Sox pitchers Dylan Axelrod and Brad Goldberg and Sam Fuld and Jason Marquis, the other former Cub involved. And what, if I remember correctly, was it the criteria for qualification? Was it one Jewish grandparent? I'm just trying to remember exactly how they determined who was eligible for Team Israel.
Sure. So I think just across the WBC, you are eligible if you are eligible for citizenship. So each country has their own kind of rules for citizen eligibility. So in Israel, I guess they're pretty lax compared to like the international standard, and certainly want as many, United States citizens to have dual citizenship as possible. So if you are, yeah, that's right. If you have just a Jewish grandparent, or even married to a Jewish person, you are eligible for citizenship and therefore eligible for the team.
Sam, have you? I assume you've seen the movie.
I have. Yeah, it took a little while. It's been out playing for a little while now, over a year, and was finally able to get to a screening down in Sarasota, Florida this spring when we were down in spring training.
Without spoilers, what was your favorite part of the movie you're in?
Well, for me, it was the on-field highlights were really cool. I think it was something that I hadn't looked back on, retrospectively. It was such a blur, and it was cool to see, I think, not just the on-field highlights, but to see the sort of perspective back home in the States. Like, we were halfway across the globe, and obviously, like, on a completely different time schedule, and it was a little bit difficult to get a sense of how big or how cool the story this really was. But when we look and when you watch the movie and you see that like some major news publications and news channels are actually talking about us, then it was like, okay, we actually did matter, at least in a small way for a minute.
What was the team trip to Israel like? Because I have not been, but I have obviously friends and family who have for various reasons and for various times, and some with groups and some on their own. But everybody comes back with a deep sense of world history and individual history that couldn't be otherwise informed.
Yeah, that's right. It was powerful. It was much like the tournament. It was powerful in a lot of ways. I think, first and foremost, I was able to take my dad, which was really cool. Neither he nor I had ever been over to Israel, but my dad is Jewish. My mom is not, so he's the reason I was on the team and was able to make the trip. So it was just a really cool week to be able to spend with my dad. And then, I think just getting a sense of belonging there and going to the Holocaust Museum, knowing that on my dad's side, we had lost several members on his mom's side. It was powerful and also just beautiful. Like, the country is gorgeous. Like, the getting to go to the Dead Sea and travel through the country there was just awesome. And to be able to see the two major cities, Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, which are like, polar opposites of each other. It was awesome. It felt like we were there for a month. It was maybe like 5 days, I think. And we packed in as much as we could. And it was great. It was powerful. It really was.
We're talking with former Chicago Cubs Sam Fuld on Sports Radio 670 The Score, the Bernstein and McKnight Show, now the Phillies Major League Player Information Coordinator. How are you enjoying being an executive now?
I love it. I really do. It's a lot of work. The salaries are a lot less than as a player. And I still, in some way, like, find it as enjoyable, if not more, than playing. It's just challenging every day. I love the fact that I can kind of stay, active, I'm in uniform leading up to the game, so I'm kind of on the field and hands-on, but at the same time, really challenging myself intellectually and just a whole new perspective. Like, you know, didn't necessarily appreciate just how hard coaches and front office members work within the game. And I'm learning it firsthand. But it's fantastic. I love it.
Sam, are you one of the guys who were, did you have to be sought out and asked to do a job in a front office like this, or were you looking to get into the game? Because so many players have different stories of how they got into their, you know, their second baseball career. I wonder which way yours arrived there.
Yeah, so it was definitely something that I always envisioned doing, as long as it worked from a sort of lifestyle standpoint or family standpoint of four young kids. And like I said, the hours are kind of crazy. So luckily my wife was on board and we agreed that this was something that would be a good fit from a family standpoint. So I knew that it was something I wanted to do. And actually the relationship with Phillies was kind of none, really. Like, I had spoken to them, my agent had spoken to them the off season prior and when I was still trying to come back to play. And I think just in passing, our general manager, Matt Glintak, just said, hey, by the way, whenever Sam's done playing and he has interest in getting into this side of the game, you know, have him call me. So I just kind of reached out, knowing that Philly was a great place to be, knowing that, you know, I'd heard a lot of great things about the organization and from a geographic standpoint, made a lot of sense for us. So it's sort of like this great fit without actually knowing anybody there. But luckily, got to know them over the summer a couple years ago, and the rest is history.
So you mentioned that you like being in uniform specifically. So are you on a, if you envision where you are 15 years from now or even sooner, are you on a managerial track or are you on a general managerial track?
I think the track is yet to, like, fork, if that makes sense. I think I'd love to be able to keep those options both open. I think I love sort of components of both of those. So, yeah, I guess the answer is I don't know, but I'd like to be able to kind of explore both options. And right now, I think my kids are young, and I really enjoy having, like, some flexibility, like being home this weekend while the team's out in Kansas City. That means a lot to me, be able to watch my kids grow up a little bit. If you're on a 81 games on the road schedule, it's a little more difficult. So I love what I'm doing right now, but I guess I just don't know what the future looks like in the next 10 or 15 years.
You know, it's an interesting answer because one thing we're seeing the larger sort of secular change in baseball has been a blurring of the line between the suits and the guys in uniform. Certainly here with the Cubs, we know for a fact they've been open about it. They've been open about the fact that everybody is communicating and working together, and it isn't this little encapsulated, all of the guys in this clubhouse or just the guys in this clubhouse and the suits don't believe in you. And largely because of data, because of information, because of how things are applied, the way guys are getting jobs as managers right now are as a sort of a function of the front office. So maybe you're in a really good place. Maybe it just doesn't fork anymore, and by the time that decision's made, it'll be something a lot more linear than we expect.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. I couldn't agree with you more. And the example in Philly is kind of the poster child for that. Like, Gabe Kapler is in line, aligned with our front office's methodology, like as much as any manager, I would wager to guess. So, like, I think you're exactly right. The role of a coach, say a hitting coach, the expectations are that he understands analytics and he understands a lot of what goes into what front offices do. And I also think the front offices are, you know, a little bit more intertwined with clubhouse. And I think a good general manager, a good assistant general manager really understands the nuances of the game and isn't necessarily in a suit, like you said.
Sam, what would be your pitch or maybe even the Philadelphia Phillies pitch to a player? Maybe you acquire a guy or maybe he comes up through the minor leagues or maybe just, you know, an old crusty veteran. What's the pitch to him about how modern analytics, modern video needs to get to players? How do you convince a guy that you've got something for him that matters?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it kind of just depends on the individual. So much of instruction, whether it's using analytics or anything else, is kind of knowing who you're dealing with. But if that person, that player has interest, there's a lot of ways that this stuff can help you. And it's kind of one of the things that I really loved about the job immediately was, like, I was exposed to a lot of this information, especially towards the end of my playing career, but I wasn't necessarily given any guidance. Like, how's this going to help you? It was just sort of like thrown at me, and it was like, okay, now what? But now we have, whether it's from a technological standpoint, there's a lot of, you know, tech that can give you real-time feedback. So say you're changing your swing and you take 100 swings in the batting cage, like, we'll be able to capture the important components of that swing with technology. Same on the pitching side. If you're looking to make an adjustment in your delivery, like, we can actually quantify that, quantify what the ball does on each and every pitch. So those come to mind. I think in terms of in-game action, if you're a pitcher especially, like, you are proactive. You have the ball in your hand. And if we can use information to sort of illuminate things in your, like, pitch usage or pitch location or your sequencing that might help you as a player, I think, like, who wouldn't want that kind of information?
We're talking with Sam Fuld on Sports Radio 670. The Score. Lastly, before we let you go, Sam, Ryan Dempster several weeks ago, was on The Score and telling stories about Lou Piniella that were so great. Right now, give us your absolute best Lou Piniella story.
Oh, man. Yeah, not all of them, I guess, are probably, appropriate for radio, but the one that I always remember is it was my first major league at bat, and I had actually been up with the Cubs for 2.5 weeks, and I was like Moonlight Graham. I came in to defensively replace Alfonso Soriano a lot, but literally was there for like 17 days without an at bat. I finally got my at bat, and it was kind of like an 8-3 game we were losing, and got to a 2-0 count and took like a huge hack on a sinker and like hit it about 8 feet, and it actually hit the top of my foot, but the umpire didn't call it, so I never got out of the box. And, you know, it was not a great way to start my batting career, but maybe a sign of things to come. But came back to the dugout and was expecting like some sympathy from everybody, and instead like Lou greets me at the top of the step and goes, "Son, you got to look at the damn third base coach. He put the take on." And that was like the worst and best moment of my life. It was like I got my first major league at bat, and then within moments, I had this angry Lou Piniella yelling at me, and I just kind of crawled in this corner of the dugout and sucked
That's
my thumb.
That's a good Lou. That's a
yeah,
really good
thank you.
Lou.
Well done.
Thank you.
Wow, nice.
I was son for about a year, and I think he finally learned my name. But.
Sam, we really appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Sam.
Enjoy the back roads of Pennsylvania. Thanks.
I will. Thanks for having me, guys.
That is Sam Fuld. He is part of Heading Home, The Tale of Team Israel. It's now playing at the Renaissance Place Cinema in Highland Park through May 16th. We'll talk some more baseball with Jonah Carey. He is scheduled to join us next. Don't go anywhere. He's got baseball thoughts, information, opinions, and things on Cubs, Sox, and MLB. You've got WSCR, The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.